Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Samach Hayomid Aleph by the Mishnah. Omer Lisha Kidashtich. He says to the woman, I engaged you halachically. V'omeret lo kidishtani. I never had saw such a thing. Nothing ever happened, according to the woman. Hu asur bikrovuteha. He is restricted in her relatives, because as far as he's concerned, he's married, or he has a halachic engagement with this woman. V'hi muteret bikrovav. On the other hand, she has no obligations or restrictions here because she doesn't agree to what transpired. So in essence, there's no fact that is being established over here because we don't have agreement between the parties to establish such a fact. But we do have, and we've noticed this before on Daf Samach Gimel, and today again Rashi notes it as well, which is the concept of Meshabi Nafshe Chaticha Di Sura, that a person makes themselves or makes something into a restricted item. That's what is happening over here. So as far as the man is concerned, he's made this woman into a quote-unquote chaticha shali sura. For him, it would be mutar in a sense because she is married. But all of her relatives, as far as he is concerned, are restricted now because he thinks he's married to this woman. Now the reverse case. He omeret kidashtani. She says that we are halakhically engaged. V'omer lo kadishtich. And he says, I never halakhically engaged you. Hu mutar bikrovuteha. He is fine with her relatives. V'asura bikrovav. And she is restricted in his relatives, the opposite case. And so you have the opposite outcome. The Gemara itself will discuss what's the chiddush in each one of these bavot of the Mishnah. Kidashtich, v'yomeret lo kidasht elabiti. He says, I halakhically engaged with you. She says, nothing happened, but the truth is that you did get engaged to my daughter. So now, hu asur bekruvot gidola. For him, he's restricted in the mother's relatives, because as far as he's concerned, or what based on his statement, he's married to the woman, and therefore he'll be restricted in her relatives. Vigdola muteret bekruvav. The woman herself is fine with his relatives, because she doesn't admit anything in terms of their being luckily engaged. Hu mutar bekruvot ktana. He is not restricted in the relatives of the ktana, because as far as he's concerned, he had nothing to do with this ktana. Uktana muteret bikrovav. And the ktana herself is muteret in his relatives, but as far as the ktana is concerned, she never agreed to any of this. And what's clear from the Mishnah, and we brought out by the Gemara, is that the mother has no auspices over here, or no nemanut, believability over here, and therefore she can't impact on the ktana's status vis-a-vis this individual. Kidashti et biteich, v'yomeret lo kidasht eloti. So now the opposite case where he says, I became halakhically engaged to your daughter, and the mother says, no, you didn't. You actually got engaged to me. Hu asur bikrovot ktana. He's restricted in the relatives of the youngster because he thinks that he's married to her. Uktana muteret bikrovav. The ktana is muteret in his relatives because we don't have any acquiescence to that. Hu mutar bikrovot gdola. As far as his relationship with the mother, he doesn't think he was ever married to her, so her relatives don't matter. Ugdola asura bikrovav. But the mother is restricted in his relatives because she's admitting or saying that she married or became engaged to him. So here you have four sections in the Mishnah, which all say the same thing. That's what the Gemara is going to plumb and try to understand what is the chiddush in one of these sections. But the basic premise is, if you say that you're married to someone, that puts you in a position when then you're restricted in all of their relatives. That's irrespective of what the other party says or agrees to. So, Omer li shaki dashtich, bitzricha, we need all these cases. Diish minin gabei didei, if it was just him, the case, the first case where he says we're halakhically engaged and she denies it, then we would have thought the reason that we believe him here is mishum tegavra lo ichbalei. He doesn't really care. Umikre amar. And he's willing to just haphazardly say something. Aval ihi, ema. But I heard we might, let's say, ilav dikim la b'dibura, unless she was certain about it, lo about amra, she would never say it. Vilitzar ihu b'krobotah, and therefore we would impose that on him as well. K'mashman, that we don't. The difference being the repercussions of their statements. In the first case, in the Mishnah, the repercussions of his statement are simply that he is restricted in her relatives. So for him, the risk is very low, which is he says, I'm married to you. And even if he's really not married to her, he may lie about it because the ramifications are pretty contained, which is that just this woman's relatives are now restricted to him. On the other hand, if the woman says, I'm married to you, and the other guy does not admit, the repercussions are pretty significant. This woman is now off the market. She cannot marry anybody at this point. The man who said that, he can marry another woman because he's allowed to take another wife. On the other hand, for this woman who, once she says, I'm married, she now is stuck in a position where she can't marry anyone. So let us say that the believability of this woman is increased or enhanced by the repercussions of her statement. That's what the Mishnah comes to dispel and say that just like by the man we don't believe him, so too by the woman we don't believe her, even though the stakes are much higher for this woman. Then, Kidashtich v'omeret, Hatu Lamali, why do we need the next section of the Mishnah which says, the woman says, not me, but my daughter? So Itzrich, Salgadat Chamina Midoraita Hemne Rachman Al-Av. That when it comes to believability or nemanut, as we saw in yesterday's daf, et biti natati leisha zeh, that I gave my daughter to this individual, so the father is believed with regards to the status of the daughter, so that's midoraita. Midrabanan hemnua ledida. Midrabanan, the Rabbanan gave believability to the mother. Now, what exactly the scenario is unclear here. There's some Rishonim who say that the Gemara's Havamina is period. That just like the father has believability midoraita, the woman was given believability midrabanan. You would have thought that. Others say that this is a unique case where we find other manifestations of the woman's auspices over the daughter, and that's the case of Yitoma. By Yitoma, we say that the mother and the brother have the right to marry off the daughter. So some Rishonim narrow the scope of this believability midrabanan to that instance, and say maybe in that instance we believe her. Not that Gemara has a Havamina that there'll be broad Nemanut for the woman. But in either case, that would have been the Havamina here, that the mother has some semblance of Nemanut here. Titzai brata b'dibura, and therefore her daughter would become restricted through her saying, Kamash Malan, that we don't say that. The mother doesn't have sufficient Nemanut to restrict the daughter, unlike what the father has, where he does have this Nemanut. The mother does not have that Nemanut, and that's why the result of the Mishnah is that she's not believed with regards to her daughter whatsoever. All right, so now the fourth case in the Mishnah. Kidashti et bitech. Hatu lamali. What do I need that for? So here the Gemara agrees that there's no Chiddush in the fourth case in the Mishnah. Adi taniha, tani namiha. Because the first two cases, it gave you the two scenarios. The third case now gives you a scenario that's a Chiddush. So the fourth case is just the reverse of the third case, but there's no additional Chiddush that is entered over there. For literary style, and again, when you are learning the Mishnayot by heart, this is helpful to have the Mishnayot, to have some sort of parallel structure to them, because then it's easier to remember the Mishnah or to memorize the Mishnah. Now here comes to your question. Itmar, what happens in the scenario where she says, we are married, and the man denies it? What do we do with regards to freeing this woman from the situation she's in? Again, she's now in a predicament or a circumstance where she can't marry anybody. Meantime, the one guy who holds the ace card is not admitting to the fact that he's married to her. So why would he want to give her a get? Giving her a get has a lot of downside for him. And so therefore, he's not going to be willing to do it. So what do we do to compel this individual to help out this woman? Itmar Rav Amar Kofin. Rav says we compel the man to give a get over here. Shmuel Amar Mivakshim. Shmuel says we ask nicely that he give the get. So it says, hi, which part of the Mishnah are we speaking about? Ilema Aresha, if we're talking about the first case, Lav Kofimika, Velo Mevakshimika. In the first case, or the first scenario, neither of these are relevant because we're talking about the case where the man said that he's married and the woman denies the whole thing. So there's no reason to compel him, as well as there's no reason to ask of him because the woman is not a surah here. It's all his issue, nobody else's issue. Ela Seifa. So now it must be the next case in the Mishnah where she says we're married and he says not. Bishlama mevakshim l'chaye. I understand why you would ask him to do a nice thing and divorce the woman so that she could be freed and released. Ela kofin amai. Why would you compel him? Why would he be obligated to listen to the Beit Din over here? Amar lo nechali d'itzai b'kreva. I don't want to put myself in a predicament now where I'm going to become restricted in all of her relatives. Because as soon as I give her a get, it's a tacit admission that there might have been a marriage over here. And a gusha has the same din as a married woman with regards to most relatives. And therefore, once he divorces her, then her relatives just become the relatives of his divorced wife. And if that's the case, he's restricted in all of those relatives. So what he had prevented before by saying we're not married, he's now going to lose by having to give the get. So it is a downside for him. Ella shmaitata ahad dadi itmar. Rav and Shmuel's statements were not an argument, but rather a cumulative effect, which is Amar Shmuel mevakshim mimenu litein get. This is the ikar halacha, which is we ask him nicely to give a get. That's his choice. In the end, it's his choice to give the get because there is a detrimental impact to him. And so he has to weigh the options here as to whether he prefers to give the get and be a nice guy and give up his optionality on a certain amount of these relatives that he can marry, or to hold his ground and say, I'm not giving a get because I'm still interested in some of these women. But once he does decide to give the get, Amrav, im natan get mi'atzmo, kofeno to liten ktuba. If he gives the get voluntarily, without us compelling him to do it, then we also force him to give a ktuba. The assumption being that if he gave the get willingly, there's some sort of tacit admission here that what the woman was saying was correct. Because otherwise, why would he voluntarily give a get? It's one thing if we ask him to give a get. It's one thing if this situation is a difficult situation, they prompted him to give the get. But if he of his own volition gives the get, that's almost a tacit admission, and therefore he has to pay the ktuba. Itmar Nami, we have a corroboration of this. Amarav Acha Barada Marav, V'amrila Amarav Acha Barada, Amarav Amnuna Amarav. So here we have a quote in the name of Rav. Kofin Umivakshin. So it brings down both of these. Where it says, Tarte, that's a stira. They're mutually exclusive. How can you be asking and forcing? You can't do that. So Haki Kamar, this is the explanation of Rav's statement. Mivakshin Imenuli Ten Get. We ask nicely of him to give the get. V'im Natan Me'atzmo. If he gives it his own volition, Kofin Otoli Ten Ktuba. Then he would compel him to give the Ktuba. Tosfot over here jumps on this scenario to bolster, reinforce his shita, which is mikan yesh lochiach da almana min erusin yesh la ktuba. From here, you can prove that someone who's widowed from being an arusa is entitled to a ktuba b'afilu lo katav, even if it was never written. Meaning, we know that the chachamim instituted a takana that women are entitled to a ktuba whether or not they have a ktuba. I mean, it's an automatic right that is granted to the woman, mitnai beitin, that she's entitled to a ktuba. It's a machloket as to when that starts. Is that only true by nisuin? Or is that also true by erusin? Tosafot is of the belief that it starts at erusin. And therefore, you get a ktuba if you're an erusin. And this Gemara seemingly corroborates that position, which is that the Gemara says here, if he voluntarily gives a get over here, then he has to pay a ktuba. Why is he paying a ktuba? We didn't see any ktuba written here. Right? We don't have any information that indicates that there was a ktuba. Now, other Rishonim, first of all, in support of Tosfot, say that the case here is clearly not a case where he married her. It's not a case where they got engaged. And then she says, you know, not only did we get engaged, we also consummated the marriage. We don't see that anywhere. And so our underlying assumption is the case here is just Erusin, not Nisuin. And that really is supportive of Tosfot's view. There are Rishonim, like the Ramban, who says that there wasn't a ktuba over here. He could have written a ktuba. And then when they come and ask him, wait, what's this ktuba doing? He says, yeah, I wrote a ktuba. I was thinking of getting married to her, and then I decided not to. So he can have a reason why there's a ktuba that's extant, even though he really never married her. So that's how the Ramban gets around this problem of Balei Tosafot. Other Rishonim, like the Ritva of the Rashba, ask on that sheet of the Ramban and say, listen, if there's a ktuba out there, and she's saying they got married, there's circumstantial evidence that really supports her, Tana, and maybe we would believe her over there and not consider the man's statement because she's now got something else that corroborates her story. They question that position of the Ramban. They were talking about a case here where there was already a ktuba that was written. There are other Rishonim who suggest that there's actually a chiluk here and depends on what type of arusa you are. I mean that if she is an almana men erusin, if she is widowed from the erusin, she may not be entitled to a ktuba. On the other hand, if she was divorced from being an arusa, there she would be entitled to a ktuba. The difference being, the purpose of a ktuba is to prevent the man from willy-nilly divorcing the woman. So in the case of a grusha, then that is reasonable to say that she's entitled to ktuba because that is the preventative measure that we're trying to stop. We're trying to stop a gerushin. But then if she's widowed, that's not what the ktuba was instituted for, at least while she's in arusa. Once she's in isua, then the ktuba also protects her as an almana, because then which she has to be taken care of. She's now a woman who is alone and needs sufficient support. She's been married. It's going to be hard for her to find another shidduch. Over here, where the woman was only at Erusin, and then she's widowed, technically nothing really happened, meaning she's still a betulah, and therefore, for her to find a husband in this case probably will not be as difficult. So there are those rishonim who want to be mechalik between a case of grusha and almana. And this is a case of grusha, and that's why she's entitled to ketubah, but not otherwise. So here you have machloket that comes up really in Gitin and in Ketubot, where Tosafot believes that a nusa is entitled to ketubah, and he uses this gemara as a strong support for that position. So I'm Rav Yehuda. I'm a kadesh veid achad in choshishin the kiddushav. Person who creates kiddushin with only a single witness, we don't worry about those kiddushin. So now, the underlying assumption here is that eid achad has some value, or that an eid achad is meaningful in certain instances, which is the gabei mamon, when it comes to monetary matters, we know that only al pi shnayim edim. You need two edim to have anything be considered testimony or testimony enough by which we'll make halachic decisions. There is a certain amount of believability to an eid echad, which is that the Torah gave believability to an eid echad in instances to generate a shvuah, in order to force a shvuah in cases of mamon. So since an eid echad has believability in the cases of mamon, the question of the Gemara, in essence, revolves around this issue, which is, if two edim can create kiddushin, what is the status of a single eid with regards to kiddushin? If we're learning out edut from mamon, maybe just like by mamon, where two edim have significance, and one eid also has significance at a different level, maybe by kiddushin, that single eid is enough significance to allow for the kiddushin to go through. Other rishonim just simply say, maybe it's a gzeret hakatuv, that one eid works by kiddushin. But that's the nature of the implicit question of the Gemara here. The Gemara later on will ask it explicitly. But implicitly, the question here is, if you have kiddushin with an eid echad, is it viable? What does that mean? So as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, in choshishin, we don't worry about it. What happens now if you have the corroboration of the two parties involved as well? Which is that you have an eid echad, plus the man and the woman agree that they had kiddushin. So now that it might be similar to the case of an eid echad by the case of mamon. In the case of mamon, if you have an eid echad and all the parties agreeing, everybody would suggest that that's enough nemanut. So maybe over here as well. In velo. He sometimes said yes. He sometimes said no. Verafio biode. He wavered on this issue, that he was unclear, uncertain about what the psak should be in this issue. So whereas if it was just an eid echad, we don't worry about it. In a case where both parties agree that it happened and you have an eid echad, Rav Yehuda wavered. So now, as Rashi notes over here, idaleke edim, if there are no edim whatsoever, everybody agrees that al piatzmo, that in kiddushin. Nobody here thinks that you can generate kiddushin by simply saying we were married or we got married. Right? Deinami amar beid echad av kiddushin b'shishneim modim, echadein ein echad lo amart. Even if we say by an eid echad and both parties agreeing that there is kiddushin, that's only when the eid echad is together with them. But simply their admission by itself doesn't do anything. The eid echad choshiv v'chayim shvua b'dinei mimononot. Just like an eid echad can generate a shvua in dinei mimononot, hilkach be'erva nami choshiv l'itkeim kiddushin b'fanav v'vad she'e shneim modim. So he has a certain amount of believability, and since he has a certain amount of believability, when we add to that the admission of both parties, then maybe that makes it strong enough to generate kiddushin. But what's clear here is that their pure admission by itself does nothing, and the eid echad by himself cannot accomplish the kiddushin. It's only between the two parties that you can generate the kiddushin. Right, so Itmar, so another member of Amoraim, Amar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel, HaMekadesh ve'eid echad ein choshishim l'kiddushav. So over here you have a definitive statement, which is not only do we not worry about it when there's an eid echad, we don't worry about it even if both parties agree that they got married in this case. The eid echad is not sufficient according to Shmuel. Remember, Rabbi Yehuda is a Talmud of Shmuel and Rav. And so over here you have Shmuel saying that nothing doing, whereas Rabbi Yehuda was uncertain about this. Eid ve'rov of Rav Nachman. Omer l'isha kidashtich. V'omeret lo kidashtani. Our Mishnah. A case where he says to the woman, I married you. She says, nothing doing. Hu asur bikrovotea, vihi muteret bikrovav. He's restricted in her relatives, she is not restricted in his relatives. Now, what exactly is the scenario here? If you need edim for the kedushin to go through, then where are the edim over here? Idika edim, amai muteret bikrovav. If we have witnesses to the kedushin, why is she then allowed to muter bikrovav, to deal with his relatives, because we have two edim testifying there is kedushin over here. Vileka edim, if there are no witnesses, amai asur bikrovotea. Why is his statement make him restricted in her relatives? Doesn't matter what he says about the kiddushin. There's no kiddushin unless you have edim here. So what exactly is the scenario? Elala beit echad. The easiest way to explain this is to say that there was a single witness over here. If you have a single witness over here, then the man's admission, along with the eid echad, that's what makes him asur. The woman's denial against the eid echad is what protects her from becoming asura bikrovotea. But the implications are, it's only because she denies it. Had she also corroborated the scenario, then everybody would believe, then everybody would be asur and everybody's relatives, and they'd be married. Right? Says, no. Hakamai skinen kon damar la kidashtich bifnei ploni uploni. I became halachically engaged to you in front of so-and-so, these edim. V'halchulam lemedinat hayam. And they now headed overseas. Meaning that the edim are no longer here. So he says there were edim, just we can't bring the edim in to testify because they are long gone. And that's the problem over here. And that's the scenario in our Mishnah, which is there were edim, two edim, just they're not around for us to ask them. So now we're left with the testimony of the man and the woman. Eitavei, another challenge to that presumption. Hamagaresh et ishto, velana imo bepundiki. Person who divorced his wife, and then he has the ichud with her. He stays in a motel with her all alone. Beit Shammai omrim, eina tzricha imenu get sheni. Beit Shammai says that you do not need a second bill of divorce. We don't assume that anything happened. Beit Hillel omrim, tzricha imenu get sheni. Beit Hillel says that we believe that he needs a second get over here. He needs to divorce her because we assume something happened here. Hey chidami, what exactly is the scenario? Idi keidim, if there are witnesses to the fact that they generated kiddushin again, through bi'ah, obviously, but they were kiddushin generated over here, then mai tamayu de Beit Shammai. Then how do you explain Beit Shammai's opinion that they're not married over here and you don't need a get? It's clear we have edim. How could they deny it? Idi leke edim, mai tamayu de Beit Hillel. If there are no witnesses here, why would Beit Hillel require a get when you don't have edim that testify to the fact that there is kiddushin? Elav beit echad. Once again, if you set up the scenario as an Eid Echad, now you start to understand, which is, you have an Eid Echad, plus you have them B'yichud, so maybe those things together could create the, or generate the Kiddushin. So over here again, what is the scenario in which Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel argue, where one can believe there is a marriage, one believes there's no marriage, where are the Eidim here? So if you establish that it's an Eid Echad, now you have reason to say, it's not a complete Eidut. So therefore, if there's a denial, or if we don't really believe that something happened, then we would not force a get. On the other hand, if we think there was something that happened, then together with the Eid Echad, that might be enough to generate the Kiddushin. So that could explain the scenario. But then again, that goes against Shmuel's position here, that when you have an Eid Echad, and both of them agreeing that there is a marriage, Shmuel says there is no marriage in that case, we're not choshesh at all. So now, how do you explain this case? So the Gemara says, if you think, uli tameich, according to your reasoning, there's an eid echad, a maseifa. Well, how do you explain the latter half of that Mishnah? Modim b'nitgarsha minei usin. And they both agree that if their divorce happened when they were only halachically engaged before they consummated the marriage, shein tzricha miget sheni, then they don't need a get sheni, even according to Beit Hillel, mivnei shein libo gaspa, because he's not comfortable yet with her to engage in intimate relations. V'isakadatcha eid echad me'emin. If you tell me that eid echad carries weight, mali min eirusin, mali min nisuin. It should be irrespective of its eirusin or nisuin. If the eid echad carries weight, it carries weight, period. Doesn't matter if she was divorced from the eirusin, divorced from nisuin. We're all talking about an eid kedushin over here. So why should that matter? The answer is, elohocha b'mayaskina. What is the case here? The truth is that the case here, or the machloket here, which the Gemara does in Gitin, does try to establish this way, is a machloket that revolves around whether a person who said bilato bilat znot, or a person does not make his bia bilat znot. And basically the machloket here would be that Beit Shammai says that a person makes his bia bilat znot, And therefore, it's possible that they had intercourse now, but it's also possible they're not married, because that intercourse, he was just having znut with her, he wasn't trying to engage her. Bigtilel, on the other hand, believes that ein adam oseh bilato bilat znut, and therefore if he engaged in intimate relations with her, then for sure they are married. That is the way that you could explain the machloket. The Gemara does not do that, in all likelihood because we paskin, or we believe that ein adam oseh bilato bilat znut, that they don't do that, and therefore the Gemara gives an alternative view, the conclusion of the Gemara in Gittin, which is, kigon deika eide yichud, veleke eide bia. It's a case here, we have edim that can testify to the fact that they were secluded together, but we have no edim that they actually had intimate relations. Beit Shammai sabri, Beit Shammai believe, lo amrinan, we do not say, heinein eide yichud, heinein eide bia. Just because we have eide yichud means we also have eide bia. It's not presumption that if you had yichud, then there's automatically bia. Beitilel sabri, amrinan, heinein eide yichud, heinein eide bia. Just like these edim testify to their seclusion, the assumption is once they're secluded, there's also bi'ah, and therefore if there was bi'ah, they become effectively the edim to testify that there was yichud and there was bi'ah over here. What you're asking here, there are many rishonim that limit this to our scenario. A scenario where they've already had a relationship, and therefore there's a certain amount of comfort, which the Mishnah already indicates. In that case, edei yichud will suffice for edei bi'ah. Meaning that in those scenarios, we don't worry about the Eide Bia because there's a presumption of if they're secluded, then obviously there were intimate relations over there. And if that's the case, this statement of Beit Hillel is limited to cases by which there is reason to believe that they would have Bia. But in a case where they don't know each other, this is their first time, maybe we wouldn't say, Heinein Eide Yichud, Heinein Eide Bia. There are other Rishonim who say that this is a derivative. Yichud leads to Bia. And therefore, if you have Eidei Yichud, even if they didn't have Bi'ah, there's presumption of Bi'ah there. And therefore, it's enough that that will consummate the marriage or assume that there is Kiddushin. Now, this has implications. We spoke about it then. I'm not going to go into depth now. The machlok between Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Henkin about marriages that are not done under the auspices of Halacha. What, do we invoke these principles of Heinein Eidei Yichud, Heinein Eidei Bia, and is there a presumption of Kiddushin because of that, because they live together as a husband and wife? We discuss this much more extensively in the Gemara and Gittin, but that is a derivative of this machloket over here. Omodim vaday v'nitgarsha min Eirusin, and everybody agrees, if the divorce came out of Eirusin, lo amrinan Heinein Eidei Yichud, Heinein Eidei Bia, b'nein she'en libo gaspa. So over there, we don't say that Eidei Yichud lead to Eidei Bia, because over there, they don't have a relationship that would establish that there would be Bia. Because over here, let's assume they were had a halakhic engagement, they severed that relationship, so there's no reason to believe that Yichud would automatically lead to Bia. On the other hand, in a case where they are halakhically engaged, and now we have Eidei Yichud, maybe over there we would say, hey, nein, Eidei Yichud, hey, nein, Eidei Bia, because that is why they're together. They're there to consummate a marriage. So that yichud is enough to establish that possibly there was bi'ah to have a consummation of the marriage. But over here, where they don't have that halakhic engagement, to say the bi'ah is generating the kiddushin in a case where they don't have a relationship, that we would not say, even according to Beit Hillel. Okay, so that knocks off another disproof to this position of Shmuel, that when you have an Eid Echad, we don't worry about it at all. Am Rav Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta mishmei derav. So now we have a statement in the name of Rav that basically says that when you have an Eid Echad, we don't worry about the Kiddushin. And even if both of them agree that there was Kiddushin, the Eid Echad is not sufficient over here. So now you have Shmuel saying something and Rav saying something. Rav Yehuda, remember, is a Talmid of both Rav and Shmuel. So now both of his Rebbeim are saying, Ein Choshishin, we don't worry about it. And Rav Yehuda himself says, Ein Choshishin, he didn't know by the case of Shneim Modim. Now we have the Gemara bringing down Nemrod, both from Shmuel and from Rav. I mean, obviously the name of another Amoraim, but both of them saying that by Shneim Modim, it doesn't matter. And so seemingly that would be the conclusion. If Rav and Shmuel agree here, that would seemingly be the conclusion. Amar Rabba Baravuna, Amikadesh Be'er Echad, Be'edina Rabba Amrei. So Rabba Baravuna says that if you get married with only a single witness, the great Beit Din says, Ein Choshishin L'Kedushav. We don't worry about the Kiddushin. Man Be'edina Rabba. Who is the great Beit Din? Rav. It's referring to Rav's Beit Din. Over here you're talking about Rabba bar Rav Huna, who's a Talmid of Rav. So when he talks about the great Beit Din, then he's talking about his Rebbe's Beit Din, or Rav, who's a significant figure in Bavel. He really becomes the Morad Atra in Bavel. So when he's talking about the great Beit Din, he's referring to the Beit Din of Rav. Vikadamre, Amar Rav Ravuna, Amar Rav. He said the Memra over in the name of Rav, which is the Mekadesh Beit Achad, Beit Din Rav Amre, Ein Choshashin Li Kedushav. So then, Rabbi Bar Hahuna says that Rav said that a person who has a halachic engagement in front of one witness is meaningless. Beit Din Rabba Amrei Ein Choshin LeKedushav. Man Beit Din Rabba. If Rav is making the statement, who's the great Beit Din? He's obviously not speaking about himself. Rabbi. That refers to Rabbi, his Rebbe. Rav's Rebbe, who was Rabbi, Rabbeinu HaKadosh. That is Rav's Rebbe. So when he says the Beit Din Rabba, he's speaking about Rabbi. That's why in Shas, many times, when the Shas uses the term Rabbi, sometimes it means Rabbi Rabbeinu HaKadosh Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Sometimes it means Rav. Depending on the context of who's saying it, the word Rabbi is used interchangeably to refer to Rav and to refer to Rebbe. Rav is on the cusp of Tana Amora. Rabbi is his Rebbe, who is clearly a Tana. But depending on who's speaking in the context, Rabbi will mean sometimes Rabbeinu HaKadosh and sometimes will mean Rav, because for Bavel, Rav has the status of like Rabbi. Whereas for Eretz Yisrael and the Tanaim, and for Rav himself, whose Rebbe is Rabbi, then the Rabbi is Rabbeinu HaKadosh. So that's why you'll find that it's used as an accolade or a term to refer both to Rav and to Rabbi, meaning Rabbi Yehuda Nasi sometimes. Meitiv, Rav Chodvai Bar Ami, Shnaim Shebao Mibidinat Hayam, two people came from overseas, Vishayim Ahem, and they have a woman with them, three parties here, Vichavilayim Ahem, and they also have a package or something that has value. Zeomer, so you listen to the claims of each of them. One guy says, Zoishti, Vizu Abdi, this woman is my wife. That other guy over there, he's my slave. Vizu Chavilati. And all these possessions you see here, they belong to me. Vizeomer, the other guy says, Zoishti, this is my wife. Vizu Abdi, and the other guy is my slave. Vizu Chavilati. And this is my possessions over here, this is my package over here. So they have counterclaims here. Each one saying that the other one is their slave and that the woman is their wife. Visha, the woman herself has a claim here and says, Omeret elu shnei avadai. These two guys, they're both my slaves. V'chavila shili. And the package belongs to me. So you have three parties here. Each one of them has a claim that is mutually exclusive with the other party's claim. Tzricha shnei gitin. She requires two bills of divorce here because of the claims of these two parties. V'govak tubata mina chavila. And then she's entitled to take her tuba out of the joint package that we have over here. Mimanovshach. Hey Chidami. Let's get, what's the scenario here? Idi itlei sade lahai, itlei sade dahai. If each party here has witnesses, meaning the two men have witnesses over here, mi matzi amra ilu shnei avadai. How could she make a counterclaim to witnesses and say, no, they're really my slaves? What do you mean they're her slaves? We have witnesses saying that this guy married her, and we have another witness saying that this guy married her. And she can then say the possessions are mine. Her claim is meaningless in the face of a din. So if that's the case, certainly she can't make a claim. Ella la beidechad. Must be a case where it's a single witness. And therefore we have single witnesses corroborating the kiddushin, but single witnesses by themselves are not enough to counter her claim, where she says, they're both my servants. Mar says, v'tizbira, does that make sense? Eid echad v'chasha mi mehemin. If you have an eid echad testifying someone, and then you have a denial by the counterparty, the eid echad goes away. An eid echad is not believed in a scenario where there is a counterclaim. Ella, the mishrei, the alma, de kuli alma lo plige, de shari. As far as her ability to be freed and marry whomever she wants, nobody questions that over here. Her denial of the marriage is enough of a reason for her to be free to marry whomever she wants, because we have no proof of the fact that there were kiddushin over here besides from these two guys' claims. It's the same as our Mishnah. The guy says he married her. She says I didn't. In order to make her claim on the chavila, she will need two gitin over here. And obviously, this whole scenario only follows Rabbi Meir's opinion, who says that Metaltalin are encumbered to the Ketubah. Because then generally, we believe that a Ketubah only has encumbrance over property, over karka. Because she only relies on karka, which stays around. Rabbi Meir's in the opinion that a Ketubah can be taken out of both karka and Metaltalin. Obviously, when we're talking about a Chavila over here, we're talking about Metaltalin. So it has to be according to Rabbi Meir's Shita that you can be Govim in a Metaltalin. Or, which is obviously not the case in the Gemara, but for the time of the Gonim, once they institute a ketubah, can we collect that at Metaltalin as well? Then it could be even according to the Shita of the Rabbanan. So now, what the scenario is interesting. The Ramban, first of all, asks, why don't we say over here that she also has two witnesses on her behalf? So the Ramban says that that's not the case, because if she had two witnesses, then the solution to the problem wouldn't just be that she needs two gitin. They'd also need a get shichrur, that they'd also need a document of emancipation, because they have two witnesses saying that they are slaves. That we don't see in the Gemara. So that's obviously not the answer or the scenario that we have here. If you're trying to solve the problem here, then the Gemara should have said that you need two documents of emancipation. The fact that the Gemara doesn't bring that up as a necessary step in solving all of this problem shows you that that's not the scenario. So it's clearly not a scenario by which she has a deem here. So now the Gemara concluded that as far as she's concerned, she can go out and marry whomever she wants. But she wants her claim on the chavilah, on the package that's there. Rashi says that as far as the chavilah is concerned, munach chadshivo Eliyahu. It's left there until Eliyahu comes. Nobody has any rights to the chavilah, with the exception in the case where she gets gitin from both parties, because then she for sure, mimonav shach, is entitled. It's either hers, or she's entitled to it because it's her ketubah from one of the two guys. In that case, she will collect up to her ketubah out of the chavilah, and after that, it'll be munach chadshivo Eliyahu. That's Rashi's opinion. There are other Rishonim who believe that you take the chavilah and divide it in thirds. It's momon amutal b'safek. We give one third to each of the parties. Then, if she gets gitin from them, she can go and collect her ketubah from their chilek, from the two guys' chilek. Her chilek remains with her. The other two chalakim that belong to those guys, if she gets gitin, then she's entitled to take her ketubah out of that. How many ketubot she gets to claim here is also a machloket. Seemingly, the Gemara is saying that she gets one ketubah here. Because there's a safek. Is she married to this guy or that guy? And the claims, in a sense, are mutually exclusive. Because she couldn't be married to both of them. And so therefore, she's only entitled to one ketubah out of here. On the other hand, there are Rishonim who argue that's not true. Because she could have been married to them sequentially. And not simultaneously. And then their claims are fine. If that's the case, she really should be entitled to two ketubot over here. One because she was married to this guy, one to that guy. And those aren't mutually exclusive. They could have been married to her sequentially. And therefore, she has an entitlement to two ketubot over here, not one ketubah if she gets two gitin. Now, the question of the two edim and two edim over here, some of the Rishonim say, wait a minute, if you have two edim for this guy and two edim for that guy, it's called edut mucheshet. You have an argument, these edim... very good, excellent. So edut mucheshet, and then their edut should not matter over here. The answer is that both of them can be right. And since the two sets of Edim could have been talking about different time periods, who says they're talking about the same time period? And maybe both of them are right. And she was married to both of these guys. But then the Rishonim asks, well, then why is that enough evidence to say that she clearly is not the owner of these two slaves over here? Because their Edut together says that this woman was married to these individuals. She was married to these individuals. They're not of Adim Knanim. There's just no way that they're an Eved Kenani anymore. And that should dispel her claim by itself, because you have these two sets of Edim that both agree these guys are certainly not her Avadim. So there are some that say Enoch Hanami, and that if we had the two sets of Edim, that would dispel her claim, and that's why we don't worry about her claim in that sense. Or there are others who say that that is an Edut Mucheshet. These are competing Ediot, and they go away. And since they go away, her claim is also not dispelled, because of the clash between these two Ediyot. Anyway, the Gemara rejects this as being a question on this premise that an Eid Echad has no meaning in Kiddushin, because we came up with a scenario by which we could explain that case without having to say there was an Eid Echad. But now the Gemara seemingly asks a strange question and says, "My Havi Allah, what's the din? What do you mean, what's the din? Haven't we been discussing this din all along? And we have Shmuel, Rav, everybody saying, Ein Choshishin, Rav Yehuda says, Ein Choshishin. The only question we had was when Shnehem Modim. And even there, Rav and Shmuel, we have Memrot that say that they don't consider it to be Kiddushin. So Rav Kahan Amar, Ein Choshishin the Kiddushav. But Papa Amar, Choshishin the Kiddushav. Machloket Amoraim. These are Batra. These are Amoraim, Batraim. These are later Amoraim, and therefore they would be Kovel Alacha. But we have a Machloket. Rav Papa says it is a problematic, or that we worry about this Kiddushin. Rav Kahana says we don't. Amar Rav Ashi, the Rav Kahana, ma datech, tiyalfit davar davar mi mamon. According to Rav Kahana, what do you think his position is premised on? That we learn out davar davar mi mamon. By Mamon, it says that you need Shnei Edim. By Erva, it uses the term Davar. And therefore, we extrapolate from Mamon to Erva to teach us that you need two Edim by anything that deals with Arayot. So, Ima Lahalan, Hodad Baldin Kame Edim Dami. If that's the case, then just like by Mamon, where one of the parties admits to something, we say that that's as good as 100 Edim. By monetary matters, the admission of one of the litigants is better than Edut. Afkanu dat baldin kame Edim dami. If your whole premise for learning out Edut by Erva is from Mamon, then take over all the Nemanut items from Mamon over to Erva. Just like by Mamon, you need two Edim. But if one of the litigants admits something, then they are considered or believed, bring that over to Erva and say the same thing. If the parties admit that something happened, that should be like Me'edim. So Rav Kahana answers Rav Ashi, Amalei Hotam lo kamechayiv le'achrine. Over there, he doesn't cause anything detrimental to another party. Hacha kachayiv le'achrine. Over here, he causes something detrimental to other parties. So by the case of Mamon, when a person makes an admission that he is obligated or that he has to pay, then the only party affected by that is him. He's now got to pay the money. And he's got to make good on his statement that he is admitting to. Over here, the repercussions of someone saying something are not only for they themselves, but affect other people as well. Which is, according to Rashi, the fact that they now admit that they're married restricts the relatives of these individuals from marrying these parties. Meaning that they have created not only a restriction on themselves, but they've also now created restrictions for people around them, that now those relatives are precluded from marrying these individuals. So when they make an admission, it's not simply something that impacts them, it impacts others. And for that, they don't have nemanut. That's the way Rashi reads it. Others, like the Rabbeinu Chananel, suggest over here that the issur is that this woman is now taken off the market. Meaning that this woman, until this point, was open or available to anyone to marry her. Through their admission, they're now married, saying that she's off the market. So now you've denied the right to marry her to all other parties that are out there. Now, it's interesting only because what exactly is their right over here? Nobody has a right to marry this woman. They have a possibility of marrying this woman, but they don't have a right to marry this woman. So just because they admit they're married, are you really impinging on other people's rights? So the Rashi reformulates it and says that you're right, you're not necessarily impinging on their rights, but you're impinging on their optionality. I mean, that's enough of an impingement to say, even though they don't have a right to marry her, they have the option to marry her. And when you take away someone's optionality, that's a denying of something that they had or owned beforehand. And therefore, you are doing something that's detrimental to them, and we won't believe you. Others, like the Ritva, suggests that the detrimental impact here is that now this woman, if someone has an affair with her, they're going to be chayav mita. They're going to be subject to the death penalty. So the detrimental impact here is that this woman, who before, if you had an affair with her, would have been maybe punished by makat mardut, or a lav, according to some Tanaim, now would be subject to chiyuv mita. So that's the detrimental impact over here. But now she's impacting other people's rights, other people's standing over here. So either way, because of that, there's a different view of admission by monetary matters than there is by divrei isur or divrei erva. Where by mamon, it's limited to the person who is making the admission over here. The admissions, quote unquote, they are saying that they're married, impacts not only themselves, but many other parties, however you express that, and that's why they're not believed over here. So now, in terms of halacha, almost all the Rishonim paskin like Rav Kahana, for the reasons that, first of all, Rav and Shmuel all agree that way. Rav Kahana and Rav Papa, we have a machloket, and the Gemara afterwards, Rav Ashi discusses Rav Kahana's position. That's also another indication that usually the Gemara thinks that's the right opinion because they discuss that opinion afterwards. For all those reasons, many of the Rishonim, almost all the Rishonim, paskin the halachas like Rav Kahana, and we don't worry about an Eid Echad. So much so that you can see here in the Tosfot Ri HaZakein, he says here, says, Ikaman da'amar, shim kideish isha beino lebeina, if he marries a woman without any Edim there, v'izmin Edim achrei hakotel, and he hides Edim behind the wall. O achrei hageder, v'ilo yada bahen, and she doesn't know about them, you don't have to specify the Eid Kiddushin that you are my Edim. We just need two Edim to witness the Kiddushin. Even though she has no knowledge of the Edim being there, that they're married because you have two Edim. There are Edim there. But then he says, says, I disagree. I think that's not the case. Deina mikudeshet. I think that there is no marriage here. The only way that you can have two edim come and corroborate the marriage is only in a case where both parties were aware of the fact that there were two edim when she was mikudeshet. Why? Because she kibla kiddushim imenu b'makom she'en sham acher. They think they're in private, and she doesn't think there are any edim there. Ve'enu chushevet she'ireh la shum adam. She thinks nobody's going to see what's happening. I was just joking around. I didn't think this was going to be Kiddushim because I didn't think there were Edim there. And therefore she can make a claim that she only accepted it because she knew it wasn't going to be real. And therefore the Edim don't matter. Everybody knows that without Edim there's no Kiddushim. The fact that he hid Edim behind the wall, that doesn't change that sense. From her perspective, in her mind, she can say that then nothing happened because I didn't see any edim. I didn't think there were edim here. So Zuriya Zakein says that the need for edut here is not simply that we need testimony, but we need two edim to be there, that both parties are aware of the fact that there are two edim in order to generate the kiddushin. Maybe the halacha is like Rav Kahana here, one aid will not do, but not only will one aid not do, the two edim there have to be known to the parties that are there, to both parties that are there. But there are a number of rishonim who are choshesh the shita of Rav Papa, who worry about the shita of Rav Papa over here, because the Gemara is never clear that the halacha is like Rav Kahana or like Rav Papa. The fact that the Gemara already went through Rav and Shmuel's opinion and yet still brings the machlok between Rav Kahana and Rav Papa says to you that despite the fact that Rav and Shmuel made that statement, that Rav Papa paskins against them. In case of Shnei Modim, Rav Yehuda was wishy-washy. So therefore, they believe that the halacha is like Rav Papa. And therefore, the Rama, when he brings it down, halacha says that yesh omrim, he brings this yesh omrim, that we should be choshesh the shita Rav Papa. And where we can, we try to be choshesh the shita Rav Papa. If it's not too difficult, it doesn't create a tremendously awkward situation, then we will try to be choshesh the Rav Papa. If there's eid achad and shnei modim. But otherwise, if it's a case where we can't solve the problem, the mainstream view is that the halacha is like Rav Kahana here, that it doesn't matter. Marzutra Rav Ada Saba Bnei, the Rav Mari Bar Yisur. So Marzutra and Avada Saba were brothers, the children of Rav Mari Bar Yisur. Polag Nichsayu Ba'adei Adodi. They had inherited their father's estate, and between amongst themselves, they divided up the estate. Atu Lekamei de Ravashi, Amrulei. So they came to Ravashi, now they asked him, Api Shnei Edim Amar Rachmana. Torah says you have to do everything by two witnesses. Di Bai Lemahader Lo Ma'atzei Hadre Behu. Is the reason you need two witnesses in scenarios is because of believability. That we don't trust that people will stand by their word or keep their word. Therefore, we bring in witnesses to testify to what happened. So the witnesses are basically testifying and giving us an additional level of believability over here because they will prevent the parties from lying and backing out of the situation. And over here, where we are brothers, and we have a certain amount of nemanut because of our standing as chachamim, maybe we don't need witnesses. Our split is a good split because we trust each other. And since we trust each other and there's a level of trust here, we don't need the witnesses. Odilma lo mekayme milta ela bisade. Or maybe witnesses are there for a different reason. The witnesses are not there for nemanut, for believability, but witnesses are needed to establish the transaction as a transaction. Meaning that a kinyan requires edim, not because we need believability or nemanut, because otherwise it's not called a kinyan. A kinyan requires two edim to witness it in order to give the action its weight or its heft. And that a kinyan only exists when there are edim. Amalu, lo ivru sadeh elu l'shakre. Says the whole purpose of witnesses are for liars. Alright, so now from this you learn out that witnesses are there for believability purposes. Now that's true in Dinei Mimononot. Here they're dealing with their estate. By Kiddushin, it is not that. What we see from this Gemara is that there's a distinction between the Eidut of Kiddushin and other Eiduyot, which is that by the Eidut of Kiddushin, the purpose of the Eidim is not believability. Otherwise, like what the Tosafot Ri'a Zakein said, when he hid the Eidim behind the wall, that if it's all about believability, those witnesses would have been fine, because it's all about what happened between them and can we get corroboration from outside parties. Then those hidden witnesses work. The fact is that those witnesses don't work is because the edim over there generate the kinyan itself or the kiddushin itself. Without witnesses, there's no act of kiddushin. They are not there to generate nemanut. They are there to generate an action that is considered an action. They give heft, or they give meaning to the action that was taken. Therefore, the two witnesses by Kiddushin are there, not because after the fact we need to know that they got married, but in order for this to be a Maisek Kiddushin, you need witnesses to that. And for that reason, when you don't have those witnesses, you don't have a Maisek Kiddushin. Other than by Dinei Mamonot, where they're there for Nemanut, the absence of the Edim doesn't change the fact that something happened, a transaction happened, a Kinyan happened. That all happened. The Edim are there for believability purposes. If they are not there, that doesn't mean that nothing happened. It means it happened, and now they have to trust each other, or we're dependent on the believability of the litigants or the parties here. Tosafot from that says, from here I can prove that you do not need witnesses to create a Kinyan. A Kinyan is a Kinyan, irrespective of whether they're witnesses or not. Unlike Kiddushin, the witnesses are not there to make it into a Maisa Kinyan. The Maisa Kinyan exists. The witnesses are there to corroborate or to be nemanim on this scenario. And that's very different, meaning that Tosafot from there says, I can go out and do all these kinyanim. For instance, when you do Mechirat Chametz with the Rav, and you make him into your shliach, you can do a kinyan. There aren't two witnesses there to the kinyan. The kinyan's effective because kinyanim are effective irrespective of whether they're edim there. So that's why the kinyan goes through, and that's what Tosafot says over here, that you do not need two witnesses to make a kinyan into a maisa kinyan. Alright, now, where it says, Amar Abayi, Amar lo eid achad, achal to chelef. Eid achad, one witness comes along and says, you ate chelef, v'ala shutek. And the other party is silent. The person who is being fingered or accused of eating chelef says nothing back. Ne'eman, the eid achad is believed. V'tana tuna, we have a Mishnah where the diuk out of the Mishnah supports this statement of Abayi. Amar lo eid achad, achal to chelef. One aid says in the Mishnah and Kreitel that you ate chelev. V'halo omer lo achalti. The guy denies it and says, I did not. Patur. Then he's not obligated to bring a korban. He's not obligated for the eating of the chelev. Taima damar lo. The only reason is because he denied it and he said that he was wrong. Ha'ishtik. The inference from that Mishnah would be that if he was silent, Mehemen, he would be believed. Amar Rabbi. Amar lo eid achad nitme'u tarotecha. That your tarot became tamei, v'ala shotek, and the other guy is silent. Ne'eman, the eid achad again is believed. And again, tana tuna, we have a Mishnah that supports this statement of Abaye through inference, which is eid achad omer nitme'u. One eid says that this stuff became tamei, v'ala omer lo nitme'u. The party who the eid is testifying against says, no, it didn't. It never became tamei. Patur. Again, over there, he's patur. Taima, the inference that we would draw again is, taima da amar lo. It's because he said no. Ha'ishtik, if he was silent, mehemen, then the eid achad would be believed. V'amar Abayi, amar lo eid achad, shorchan nirba. He says that your animal was subject to bestiality. V'hala shotek. And the counterparty is silent. Ne'eman. He is believed. V'tana tuna, and once again we have a Mishnah whose inference supports this. Shenevda bo avirav, shemit al pi eid achad. That a shore that had an aveira done with it, or it killed someone, al pi eid achad by one witness, or al pi abalim, or by the testimony of the balim, ne'eman. They are believed, meaning that this animal is no longer good to go on the mizbeach, cannot be used for a korban anymore. Hay al pi eid achad echidami. What is the al pi eid achad over here? Either ka modu balim, if the balim agree with it, I know al pi abalim. That's already mentioned in the Mishnah, that's al pi abalim. Elav the shotik. It must be a case where the balim are silent, and therefore it works. V'tzricha, and we need all three of these cases. Diashminan hach kamaita. If you only taught me about the case where he says you ate chelev, elav the kimle benafshe da avad. If the person himself wasn't certain that he did it, chulin bazara lo v'maite. He would not bring a korban in order to gain kapara for what he did and bring chulin to azara biadayim. Unless he was certain that he did it. So there his shtika, his silence is acquiescence, because the ramifications that are that he have to bring a korban. And when he brings the korban, he's going to be bringing chulin to lazara if he's not certain about this. So there we say that the shtika is kehoda'a because of the ramifications. Aval nitme'u tarotecha, me'imar amrinan. Over there, the guy just remains silent. He'll say, hay deshotek, desavar chazilei b'mei tumato. Because, you know what, alright, it's not a big loss. Okay, we'll let this guy say whatever he wants to say, even if I don't think he's right. Doesn't really matter. So now it'll be tamei. I'll eat it when I'm tamei. I won't use it when I am tahor. I mean, that there's still value left in this. And so it's not such a big deal just to let him go. So I'll be silent because, you know what? No big deal. V'yashminan ha. If you're only talking about the case by the tumah, yishum de kamafsi lebi mei tarato. There is still a monetary loss, which is he can only eat these items when he is tamei, not when he is tahor. But about shoro nearby, in the case where he makes a claim that his animal was involved in bestiality, that what's the real monetary loss here? I can't put it on the mizbeach. Not every animal out there is supposed to get on the mizbeach. This is a minute loss, or if there's any loss at all. I never intended to put this animal on the mizbeach, so there's no loss. And therefore, maybe you would say shtika is not kehoda. Tricha, that's why I need all three of these cases to teach me that the Eid HaChad is neman in all these cases where the balim are shotek. Now, Tosfot over here, you can see, spends a large Tosfot over here, trying to reconcile this Gemara with something that we saw together in the Gemara in Gittin, which is a case where, after working with the Balabait, the individual worker there says, you're Tarot or Tameh. Do we believe him, or do we not believe him? So there was a Machloket Abayin Rova, but there has to be Biyado. Does it still have to be in his control? Abayin says, if it's still under his control, and he says it, then he's believed. Rova says that, as long as it's the first time that he's speaking to him after the fact, and since it was Biyado in the past, he can make a claim, and we believe him. So now, Tosfot over here says, what's the difference between the case over here and that case over there? Over there, we require it to be biado. Over here, we don't require any biado. We say that he's naman. What's the difference between these two cases? Tosfot says the difference in the cases is what the Baal says. Does the Baal admit or not admit over here? Over here, we have shtika. Shtika is kehoda'a. And that's why the Eid HaChad is naman over here. The Eid HaChad, if the Baal denies it, or if the owner here says no go, then the Eid HaChad loses all of his ne'manut over here. Ah, so what about the case in Gittin? That's why the case in Gittin, when the Eid HaChad has it biyado, he has the ability to do this, according to Abayi or Rabbi, he had the ability to do it, he gains additional believability that overcomes the denial of the Baalim. And that means that even if the Baalim deny it over there, the Eid HaChad is still ne'man. Why? Because biyado. He had it biyado, and that's not the requirement over here. What the Baalei Tosafot, in essence, are saying is, why is the Eid HaChad ne'eman bi'isurim, or what is the underlying believability of an Eid HaChad? The way that Tosafot frames it over here is that the believability of the Eid HaChad is not because he's really believed. It all comes out of the admission of the Baal. So if the Baal admits to the fact that it is true, that's what creates the culpability over here, is because the shtika is kehoda'a, and as long as the Baalim don't deny it, the Eid HaChad statement with the silence, which is acquiescence of the person that they're speaking against, that is what creates the ne'manut over here, and that's why they're believed. But as soon as that person speaks up and says no, then the Eid HaChad goes away because he has no ne'manut in and of himself. That is the way that the Tosafot formulate Eid HaChad ne'man. There is no such thing. Eid HaChad has no ne'manut by himself. The only thing that the Eid HaChad does is sets up a context in which the silence of the Baalim becomes acquiescence or becomes a hodah. That's the view of the Baalei Tosafot. Again, when we discussed this in Yivamot, we said that the other side, where like the Shita of the Ramban and many of the other Rishonei Tzarfat, believe that an Eid HaChad has ne'manut. That the real reason that over here it works is because Eid HaChad is ne'man. And ne'man means really ne'man. Mido raito, and Eid HaChad has ne'manut. So when the Baalim are silent, then the ne'manut of the Eid HaChad is what generates the chiyuv or the obligation over here. In a case where the Baalim deny it, therefore the ne'manut of the Eid HaChad goes away because the gzeret ha-katzuv is that when you have two edim, they can overcome or they become fact or mitziyut, meaning that whatever they say, we believe, irrespective of what the Baalim are saying. Now then, by Eid HaChad ne'manut, he has ne'manut, but when the Baalim deny it or they counter his statement, then he loses his ne'manut, or basically the Baalim have equal ne'manut as the Eid HaChad. And in that case, it's one against one, and therefore we can't say we believe this guy over that guy anymore. Once you have two Eidim, they create a new entity called Eidut that can overcome the denials of the Baalim and so on and so forth. But there is this machloket in the Rishonim as to whether the ne'manut of an Eid HaChad derives from the admission of the Baalim, or is it derived from the case of the Eid HaChad himself. What that has a nafkamina is for it when the Baalim say any yodea. When I say I don't know. Tosafot over here says that the Baalim say any yodea, they're not believed. The Eid Echad is not believed anymore. Because for Tosafot, the whole Ne'emanut derives from the Balim's Shtika, their admission. That's what drives the Ne'emanut. If he says any Odeh, you're missing the key element that makes it into Ne'emanut. On the other hand, for the Ramban and those that agree with his shita that Eid Echad is Ne'emanut, then by the case of any Odeh, the Eid Echad would be Ne'eman. Any Odeya means that he's not countering the claim of the Eid Echad, and therefore the Eid Echad would be believed in cases of any Odeya. So that is a big nafkamina about how you view the Ne'emanut of Eid Echad. Here you can see the Bali Tosafot clearly taking the position that all derives from the admission of the Balim, and therefore in cases where they deny it, doesn't work. Cases when they say any Odeya, doesn't work. In cases where they deny it, but the Eid has biado, that can overcome the denial of the Baal. Whereas for the Ramban and those that follow that Shita, the Eid Echad has Ne'emanut. It's only when the Balim are countering that claim where it's not believed. In any other scenario, we would believe them, or we would believe the Eid Echad, because he has Ne'emanut midoraito. That is the power of an Eid Echad. And that obviously has ramifications in other places in Shas, including by the case of an Eid Echad testifies about the death of a husband. How do we deal with the fact that it's a davar shebe'erva? It's a davar shebe'erva, and Eid Echad is not Ne'eman. You always need shnayim by davar shebe'erva. How did the Chachamim empower in Eid Echad to testify that the husband of this woman passed away? So for the Balei Tosafot, they're really in a bind. Eid Echad has no Ne'emanut midoraita. So why do we believe them over there? So the Balei Tosafot have to come up and say that the Chachamim have a right to be okir davar min haTorah, and that's in a case where there's a tzorech. And that's how they explain it. The Ramban, on the other hand, says no, then an Eid Echad is Ne'eman deoraita. There might be a special requirement by Erva that we want to, but an Eid Echad has Ne'emanut deoraita. And therefore we're talking about Ne'emanut deoraita over here because of the fact that they were mekil by Aguna. And because of that, that Eid Echad of Ne'emanut by deoraita works. And that machloket shows up there at the end of Yevamot, again, about what's the nature, or how what's the power of this Eid Echad to testify about the Aguna's husband passing away. Okay, we're going to stop here, 12 lines down on the top of Samach Vav Amud Aleph.